This is Jason Nemro. You're listening to Cohen Meanderer. And this recording is about family sovereignty. Now, I've talked about this on occasion in the past. I am facing a looming possibility that I might I might be furloughed. There is government shenanigans going on, and it seems like there is enough fractured politics in America today, even beyond what's normal in the past, that it's not going to be resolved quickly. There's already information about what happens if it lasts 30 days, things like that. So I was wondering what I should do. There's a certain idea that the wise thing to do is go out and find another job. I know not really excited about doing any such thing. I tried a little bit of a first faulty kind of retirement, just after I left Pantex, and I think it was about 2 or 3 months of doing other things, which I enjoyed thoroughly. I got back into a little programming, wrote a little application to kind of an exaltation simulator. Oh, pardon me. Oh, this time of the year is always the worst for my nose running. It was an elegant little thing. Anyway, so I enjoyed that. Then I got this job opportunity, doing the highest paid job I've ever had. One of the shortest commutes I've ever had. So, when I think of this next possibility and not knowing exactly how long it's going to last, everybody's trying to base it on past government shutdowns, which have either been very short or averted. Anyway. I've taken a look at my creativity side. I don't have to make much money at all. A little bit of more money than what I make now. Make things work. Of course, everybody will say, "Oh no, you have to make the maximum amount of money. Put forth the maximum amount of effort. Because you know." One medical bill will destroy you. You go, that's true. That's true. I do have, well, anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but I've been thinking that might not be the wise thing to do. Or I don't know if it's wise or not. It may not be the inspired thing to do. So I returned to, I said, you know what? We probably need to write some more, but I've always struggled with saying, well, do you really want to do fiction again? And it's like, no, this is, I've got some fiction started. But I'm thinking that the better thing, and frankly, the better money to be made would be to work on nonfiction. And, kind of goes along with the admonitions I had way back in like 2004 that I wanted to be a writer, lecturer, and speaker. This would make that happen and probably net me more money than I've ever had before. You know, they'll probably say, "Guy, can't believe I kept working." But I could have put this together. So I've been thinking of the different parts that would go into it. It says we probably need to do kind of a lead in, a short little history about how I got to where I am today. Different elements of family sovereignty. Number one, educate your own children. Number two, live off of one income. They go, "Well, that just can't be done today." They go, "Well, you're gonna have to work harder and get more creative. You're probably not gonna be able to buy a ready built situation." Like, frankly, I was always able to do. And that was something from the past that may not come back because, people are lazy and they can make an awful lot of money quickly. And that can translate into a mortgage pretty fast. Of course, you got to keep slaving away on that mortgage. You keep thinking that that's what you're doing, and you're going, "No, you're actually paying exorbitant amounts of money for almost everything you're talking about." And, of course, the whole thing about avoid HOAs. Just avoid them. And that you probably will have to come up with creative living things. Like I was just in Yuma, Arizona not too long ago. And I was driving past, I guess a wrecking yard is what you would call it these days. And out front was a pretty good sized, I think it was a sailboat, pretty good sized sailboat. Something that a couple and a child or two might be able to live in as they try to get something more substantial. Now that's going to rely upon a husband and a wife working very tightly together, even though they may be doing different things. You know, the purchase of a piece of land, preferably with a well on it, the husband having to spend a lot of time off just making money because you'll need the money to get the resources to build a place. I've got an acre of land out in the desert of central New Mexico. And, I've mostly walked away from it at the moment, but I may hang on to it. Just because at some point I may decide to build something out there. Not terribly necessary in that I've already got a house, but this is a house with all the normal difficulties of accoutrements that mean that you require a lot of money. You know, not a ton. Oh, there's the moon. Excellent. Tomorrow is blood moon, There's going to be a total eclipse of the moon tomorrow in the middle of the night, just right around midnight, sorry. And I want to stay up and wait for that, just to see something. We need to not lose our wonder, and that's another thing you need to do. Don't lose your wonder. Don't let other things get in the way of you looking up at the stars, going to the mountains or to other places, seeing the beauty in things. I'm grateful for my niece Jane. She sees beauty in a lot of the things around her, and that's wonderful. Don't play that down, you know. Anyway, okay. As much as you possibly can, homeschool your kids. Now you're going, it says, well, what advice do you give to single mothers? And I go, you know what? I don't know what to tell you. This is the best thing to do, probably, would to be to, especially if they're very young, and your family efforts have failed to the point to where you don't have one. You know, it's mostly women. Your husband isn't coming back for one reason or another, or you just married stupidly. That's a possibility. Or even worse, have children without marriage and then found out that having children does not inspire marriage much. And that's not the right way to proceed. You should not be sexually active until you're married. Marriage is the ultimate commitment. And if you're not committed to it, or if the other partner, sorry, I hate to call it partner, your husband or your wife is not committed to it either, marriage between man and a woman, that's what forms a family. Any other things do not form any such thing. That's just silly playtime. Mostly saying, I don't want people, you know, I want people to respect me, and I want to be able to have sexual pleasuring, whenever I like. Anyway, there's certainly going to be a part that's going to be about the proper formation of a family and what it constitutes and what it's going for. One of the big problems we have fallen into is worshiping children, which should definitely not be done. Childhood is a phase of life, and really a short one. And its sole purpose is to build an adult. We have too many people who don't really grow up. There are examples, mostly in my wife's family, of there was one where the mother wasn't taking good care of herself, and apparently the only quasi-responsible person in the household was the child, and she ultimately went out, got the work she needed. She got knocked up a couple of times, and now there's kids in the picture, which is sad. Not that people weren't trying to do the right thing. Things just went poorly, badly. Then another one, the parent was so responsible, she allowed her child to stay pretty much a child. She's now approaching 40 and still pretty much behaving like a child. You know, goes out, has fun, works a little, still lives with her mother, has punched out two kids by marriages that just kind of fell apart. And I can't say what's going on, but you know what? This is the biggest thing is commitment and the ability to be committed, bringing two people together as one, not just as one, into one. And there is no thought about breaking up. There is no thought of doing that. If something needs to be done, they get down, they make the decision, and they do it. And that does not include the whole thing about, well, we should get divorced because I'm not having as much fun as I used to have, or you aren't as amazing a sexual partner as I wanted, you know. I have to blame media, includes movies, things like that, for setting the expectation so high about sexuality, individuality, narcissism, and that you can somehow weave these things into a good marriage. And that doesn't work. It says these aren't the constituent parts of a good marriage. Marriage is the first thing. That is the crux of a family. You are raising children so that they might create their own families. The great part is you don't have to do it alone. You have parents. Don't ever put yourself in the situation where you've estranged yourself from parents. Usually that's done for selfish reasons. Make up 1,000 rationalizations why it was a good idea for you not to even talk to your parents, do things like that. And it doesn't even matter if half your realizations are true. Your parents, their parents after them, this constitutes a wealth of experience and advice and everything else that more, as much as you could possibly need and use to succeed yourself as a husband and a wife, a mother and a father. And if you throw out these things in favor of whatever, you have to be careful. Either you need to integrate yourself into another family, and families are usually pretty good about integrating you. People are integrated into families all the time. As part of marriage, you get integrated into your spouse's family. As much as you can be. But you don't want to throw that out. So yes. Kind of a corollary to building your own family is to be a part of your extended family. Now, I don't know if I'm really all that good. You know, a lot of the things I say have come just as much from my failures as from my successes. There's plenty of people who say, oh yes, I had a beautiful family, and aren't all my children wonderful and grown up in a Latter-day Saint way of looking at it? You know, they've all been married in the temple and they're all raising their little broods, and you're going, man, that's fantastic. I really encourage those kinds of families. I'm not a real proponent of at least during the childbearing, child-rearing years of trying to fulfill everyone's aspirations and desires. This isn't, number one, it probably isn't good for children to be particularly fulfilled as children. That's important. One of our great problems is we often sacrifice so much to give our children a beautiful childhood that they don't want it to end. And that they have no incentive to progress. I taught my children very much and inculcated probably the whole thing of you don't want to stay a child. To be an adult is far better. Although I don't know if I really showed how happy I was with being an adult. My biggest thing is I don't want to have to do what other people say particularly. I do, you know, for money. I do because I need my parents' advice on a regular basis. I don't need to have some strained, weird relationship because I need to pick their brains. Nobody else besides God knows you better than your parents do and can not only help you see what you need to be about, but also to be able to say, I think this is not a good idea for you to get into this. I don't think it's a good idea for, you know, a certain career choice, things like that. Not that making bad career choices is that bad. Usually after just a couple of years, you can figure out whether a career is good or not, or whether what you're doing is the right thing to be doing for you. But also, I think we overplay that hand too hard. I was always looking for a better situation, and to be really honest, I think I walked away from a goodly number of good situations for like employment. Anyway, so here's some things to consider about that. There's another big thing that I've started doing. I don't know what my dear Lisa thinks of any of this stuff, to be honest. I think it's very important that couples vote together. Married couples vote together. That's part of being one. The whole thing about it says, well, women tend to be more left-leaning, and so they will tend to vote for socialism because there, can I be honest, there is a lot of fear for women in the world. They all thought that when they started behaving more like men, that all of a sudden they would get the kind of confidence or however else you want to describe it that men tend to have. The sad part is it's mostly chemical, and even when you do that, I said, man, jobs get lost. Circumstances die. Every other Hallmark Lifetime movie with a girl boss, it says, I don't know that there are enough advertising firms, enough fashion places, enough publishing houses, the kinds of things that they put forth and said, these are the kinds, you know, lifestyle websites. You know, I guess you can create another one of those to add to the now, to the millions of them, and try to say, oh look, mine's special because mine, focuses around the color purple. I don't know. And I'm not trying to denigrate this except to say that, you know, women get caught in these things. I can do anything that I want. I can do this and I can do that. I can have a career. I can have a family. And you're going, well, this says technically you can get all those pieces and you can try to get good at juggling them. But to be honest, your children are going to be messed up. Of course, everybody says, well, you know, this makes them grow up faster. And you go, yeah, grow up faster without any support, without any particular support. You know, oh, there's money. And you go, oh, yeah, put teens together with money and that turns out well. It says it usually doesn't. Relentless chase for money. It's really sad to see women, young women, who do very well financially, but they predominantly find the easiest way to do it. Everybody does. And they go into virtual prostitution. You know, I have an OnlyFans site and I have a crowd of men who throw money at me, especially if I do things on camera that they would like to see. You know, personal, I'm not even going to get into it. But yeah, this is just a horrible thing. It breeds, okay. Having a life totally devoted to money, it's okay if one of your parents has to behave that way. That's really important. Like, you know, I was a single earner. I ran a single earner household. I made it. Lisa spends it. And you go, and that's okay. Because Lisa has a better bead on what's good. I am so austere. Everybody will eat beans and rice and out there toiling in the backyard, in the garden. That's what, you know, my tendency. But I tend to be, I'm quasi-autistic. I'm a man's man. I do what men do. You know, do I complain about? Sure. You know, let me tell you what I don't have. I don't have a watering hole that I go to after work every day, get sozzled with buddies, and then come home later. Says I always just came straight home. And so, yeah, they go, well, you know, I wish you would, you know, have a better attitude. You go, you have to understand the better attitude came from going to the bar after work with your buddies and shooting pool and getting a little bit, it's not the right term, tipsy. So you can loosen up and feel okay. We found out later that really wasn't very good for the family. So you had to step up your game a little bit. Everybody has to step up their game a little bit. The sad part is, well, no, it's not sad. The interesting part is that it usually goes different ways. Men have to go out and make sufficient money. You just can't have a part-time blah, blah job. Sad part is sometimes that kind of works on some level. If both parents have part-time blah, blah jobs, two or three of them, and we all say, oh, isn't that horrible? And you go, you know what? It says, I don't know if it's horrible or not. It's a lifestyle choice. Instead of going and doing the best you can, trying to figure out what the best paying thing to do is. That's what I ultimately did, was I chased money. And I needed to, you know, running a running a charitable nonprofit is cute, but unless you're a money launderer, it's hard pressed to feed your family. I always liked It's a Wonderful Life, but that was one of the problems with George Bailey was that he was basically running a nonprofit, and he was only, you know, he was barely making any money, and it's like the ultimate morality of the poor salaryman. At some point, you have to get past that. Anyway, so the men have to go out and make the income for the family, and sometimes that requires sacrifice on their part, and that you might not see them too much. You know, the current thing about fatherhood, that you need dads around, and you go, but you need dads being dads. And what does that mean? That means going out and working and doing what needs to be done. And you can look at your dad and go, I don't want the life he's got, but you know what? That's the life you need to reconcile yourself to. Women the same way. And you go, well, you sound awfully traditional. I guess only because, as we've seen over time, traditional is really the only thing that really works. Now you can go out and the most egalitarian work, as far as I'm aware of, is being farmers. Men work hard as farmers, women work hard as farmers. My education was basically in land grant sorts of activities, farming, agriculture, and homemaking. Now you're supposed to be efficient and good at that so your husband doesn't have to kill himself making so much money and stuff like that. Or both people contributing to the ultimate goal, and the ultimate goal is to be rich or to kids have a wonderful school life. I always find it interesting when most of the communities that I have lived in, both as a young person and as an adult, are communities that exist around a school. If the school closes for one reason or another, that's also why government, taking a lot of government help is also very problematic. You really don't want to do it. Because then you're locked into this weird relationship, you know. Loyalty to the school, you know. We need the parents to come and do all this stuff and do all that. And the problem is the school is somewhat teacher-centered to child-centered. But factory child-centered. You know, the community all has to do with your kid fitting in well with the school. And that's bad. The whole thing about it is don't let an institution educate your children. You educate your children. If you're going to have a community, make it a church community. And don't be afraid to form a new one. There are a lot of communities that were built up for one purpose or another. Most of the towns that I have lived in have been railroad towns. They formed around a necessary railroad stop back in the days of steam locomotives. You would have to stop. You would have to take on water. You'd have to take on fuel. You'd have to take on all kinds of stuff. Most of the towns around me are old railroad towns. And it's interesting, there's two towns north of here, Mascaro and Roy, that, you know, and people say, well, what are they doing up there? And you think that they're crossroads for highways. It says, but to be honest, the railroad came through first. The highway was the track alongside the railroad. Anyway, so these places are interesting. They're now school towns. The town exists to support the school. Everybody who's in town, you know, either went to that school as a child, goes to that school now as a child, or just throws themselves at the school because that's the most important thing. And you're going, this is just bizarre. You get different teachers in, and those teachers have other ideas, culled typically from other places. You have to import teachers. You can usually have two or three people who went to school, and then they went to college, and then they got their teaching certificate, all with the purpose of coming back to their little hometown, to the little school that they loved as a child. Let me tell you, most kids love their schools probably as much, if not more, than they love their families. Says, which is interesting. It creates this strange conflict that shouldn't exist at all. I also think that we school our children too long. I don't know if we start too early. We certainly end way too long. The fact that somebody who's 18 years old is still at the local school is just heart-wrenching. I don't know what the right thing is for that. This is honestly, most kids who probably should be college-bound probably have everything that they need to go to college at the end of eighth grade. The old thing of your school used to go from kindergarten to, there's the big moon coming on. Okay. And at midnight tonight, we will have the eclipse. And it hopefully will be pretty dang cool. Hopefully, I don't think we're planning on having any cloudy skies, but you never know. Usually under these circumstances, it changes how things are going on Earth, and it incites rain. So, we'll see about that. Anyway, I've only really felt like schools were useful. The institutional school was really useful to kids from broken backgrounds. And the sad part is, I think on the institutional level, society said, we need to support our schools better, therefore, let's kind of encourage broken families. Let's start tearing apart the family, which is the primary, opposition to the school controlling how children are raised and taught. When your kids were of a certain age and you wanted to learn something, you would bring in an itinerant teacher who would do reading and writing and mathematics. And that was pretty much it. And I mean just math. addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, keeping a ledger. So you know when things come in, you know when things go out. Mathematics has so much to do with organization. In fact, I think they should call it organization. These are some of the things that I really appreciated from my advanced studies, which I basically fluffed off, in home economics. Because I think that was the most important thing, is microeconomics. I guess under these circumstances, it wouldn't even be called micro. It'd be nano. Nanoeconomics, which is the economics of the home. And it's been flushed out because everybody wants to do STEM. Can I be honest? STEM. And STEM is mostly about trying to get people with no aptitude or interest in science, technology, whatever. Competent enough so that they can be electronic assemblers, stuff like that. Stuff that we really don't need here. Or stuff that we've really outsourced to other places. And of course, with the economy changing, we may be bringing that stuff back, and we're going to need those assemblers again. Instead of people who constantly look at Hallmark movies and say, you know, the most thing I want to do is I want to start and run a muffin shop. And you go, how many muffin shops does any random place need? And you go, what, one, maybe two at best? Per village. The place I am from now, it isn't much of a village anymore, but it has the economics of a village. And you go, yeah, I says, to be honest, when you have a grocery store and everything's brought in from someplace else, it says, and people have pretty low standards of almost everything and are willing to pay a premium to have their produce from Mexico or South America, exotic. The really funny thing is that much of the food that people think is normal and want to eat would have been considered exotic. I always have a 150-year rule, and I apply it to so many things. So that probably needs to be a part of family sovereignty too. For how to make things work is to set your tolerance level to certain things. Now, there's some things you can't change. You can't change the price of utilities, which I think is hilarious. I don't know why the generation of electricity, which we've been doing for about 100 years, is now so massively more expensive than it used to be. And they go, well, we converted from coal to, I think in my area of country, we mostly use natural gas to create electricity. It says, but that's been happening for over 70 years. And it's like, how come this stuff is so much more expensive? And you go, well, you know, inflation. You go, well, I don't know what I think of inflation. I think it's mostly people getting weird. I think it's increased burdensome regulation. And there's not much you can do about that except to vote for people who either A, won't let it happen, or B, will get rid of it once they see it. The people need to work. And they need a work to do. And you go, yeah, but it's killing them. It says, most work does. Most work kills you. You know, even the Bible says, you know, you should waste and wear out your life in service to God. And then the biggest service you can do to God on this planet is to expand your family. Number one, to create your own family, and then to have your children do that. And we all think that there's so much education to be. Oh, I'm going to have to go to school and learn how to do this. You go, you know what? 150 years ago, this stuff didn't exist. You learned what you needed to do, or you came up with a gumption and did something completely new and different. And there wasn't a school to go to. So it becomes another elevation of the 150-year rule. I used to call it the 100-year rule, and then I got older and I figured out that saner times we have pushed further and further back. That's just the way it is. Wow. So what else needs to go into a family sovereignty book or presentation? Also need to render it as an audio book so that people can listen to it as they drive, pay for it that way, along with having the book itself. And I'm gonna use the Amazon Audible cluster. You can get it as an ebook, but it's mostly sold as a paperback book to tell you what to do. I guess after all said and done, although I did study home economics, child development, I was done with that. I commenced to exercise the principles, not just continue to study them. And being a home economic, being a home economist may very much help me to do that, to say, you know what? I said, wasn't going to make any money taking care of other people's kids. Is that, and I had a philosophical problem with it, you know? I didn't think that doing this was the best thing to do. When I went into this, my picture in my head was that I would be helping poor children. But you have to understand that poor children, poor families can't send their kids to daycare. Poor kids, children were latchkey kids. Poor children were, and I was one of these too. And poor children stay close to extended family, and you go live with your grandma, or you spend a lot of time with your grandma. And stuff like that. And so I wasn't going to make much of a living with really broken people. That, and I'm sorry. Single mothers of any stripe are bears to deal with. They, beyond anything else, mostly, can I be honest? When they're single mothers, they probably drove away either their husband or their potential husband, you know, being bears. It was dumb. Thinking they're all that. So when they come to their child care center, what do? They are bears to their thing. Especially to me, I was a human male. Number one, they didn't want me taking care of their kids. Number two, society told them that men were the root of all evil, so I needed to get out of there. Women are okay with other women taking care of their kids, but used to be, it really has to be an alpha bear. You know, the head teacher at the Laboratory Child Development Center that I worked at during college, one of my jobs, she was an alpha bear. Oh my gosh. No mere mother, no mere parent dared challenge her on any level whatsoever. They were all, you know, she was an old kindergarten teacher. I think that was where she got the bulk of her education. She was kind of a drill sergeant sort. A really nice person, but hard as nails. And you didn't challenge her ever. She had all the answers. And you know what? She probably did have all the answers. Even if it didn't go for you. She was the first one that said that she was kind of glad I got out of child development and did something else instead. I thought that was great. She, in my young adulthood, I was probably in my 30s, she had cancer and she died. And she always had these problems. So anyway, but yeah, she was definitely a prime mover in the lives of children. If you had to rely on a school teacher, she would probably want to be one of the school teachers that you relied upon. Especially if you didn't have a problem with her morals. She had very strict morals. You know, very, very Christian lady. And how you were going to do that. Anyway, so that's something that could be brought into family sovereignty. As, you know, and I say, you know what? It says, you don't think that this is really tied to the modern workings of family. But I tell you, every time you hearken back to the way things were done 150 years ago, you're going to find something valuable you can bring back and try to integrate into modern times. And I don't, you know, and they say, well, you're a conservative. You go, well, I said, I would say that except to say now I'm probably not. Progressivism has been around for so long now that it has become the conservative. Right now they're trying to tear government apart, just strip it down just to something at least smaller, maybe less expensive. And who's fighting this, I would have to say almost progressive change? It is leftists who are very upset about all this stuff going on. They enjoy the big government that they have crafted. It says, and they have become the conservators of the way things are right now. I says, can I be honest? I think I have looked at both ways. And I have made a conscious choice not to throw away all the whatever good innovations we've come up with, but also to say I don't think we've done very many good things. And of course I'm always going to bring in my priestly aspect, say the things that I think are important to say. Anyway, so yeah. So I fully intend for this government shutdown to happen. Number one. Number two, and I also think it's somewhat a political thing. I think in them trying to downsize government, having the government shut down, one of the big complaints is, oh, people are going to suffer when you eliminate my job. And you have a whole cacophony of people that pretty much say that. And it means that if you listen to that and you say how careful you're being, it'll never happen. It'll never really, there will not be a demonstrable change. It just won't happen. Most changes that needed to happen involve horrible things. COVID, for all of the horrors that it produced, and one of the big ones is that a lot of people started turning to government to solve their problems. And people can say, well, we have to, and you go, well, maybe. Now, I don't know if it's really done a wonderful job of telling people, you know what, you need to store stuff back and take care of your own needs without turning to some government, because the first thing government will do is strip away your sovereignty and say, yeah, you can take this, but we need this and this and this and we will turn you into our virtual slaves and we'll put you to work doing this and that. All kinds of things. I think the government shutdown is, like I said, I when I found out there might be a government shutdown, I kind of went, well, you know what? This is not only would is it probably right that the government shut down? It may also provide a heck of an opportunity to see when most of the government just has to stay home and not do anything. This is how much we can do. So, to be honest, the fiscal government not being functional might bring us back to a state, like I said, it might be a manifestation of the 150-year-old rule, might bring us to a state where all the screaming and yelling about we can't survive without a big, huge, smothering government. We just can't do it. And you're going, but we have so far, and the things that happen during a government shutdown, if it goes long enough, we just start tearing up. The government starts just dissolving away. The thing you have to do is when you do downsize, make sure you reduce the taxes. Make sure that goes down to a lower level. So it might very, very well tear up things. And it may not be a bad thing. Because to do it voluntarily and incrementally has never worked. You might have been able to strip down things a little, but then it just grows all the bigger. It's kind of like a fat kid, you know? You'll put them on a diet and they'll start losing weight. But then as soon as conditions change, as soon as money keeps pouring in, I said that kid is going to swell up bigger than you ever saw before. We're really going to reset things to a smaller size, especially government. Really need to let it happen. Anyway, so that's an interesting prospect. says, and you can compare these nano economics with macroeconomics, the really big ones. So, anyway, the whole point that families need to be sovereign, they need to be able to take care of themselves, they need to be able to conduct themselves, whatever they need to do, forgetting the basics of life, food, water, shelter, clothing. These things need to be almost completely deregulated. The whole idea of a housing market needs to basically disappear. People should be able to create their own shelter. So these are some of the things that I want to go into the Family Sovereignty book. Not to be kind of a catch-all, but to a large sense, these things need to be pushed through. Other entities do not have power over the family. We tolerate way too much family brokenness. Because institutions feed off of family being broken. We need to reestablish stigmas on being sexually promiscuous, having sex outside of marriage. It says these are pariahs. You know, we used to actually do something to these people. We didn't support them. We didn't help them. We didn't try to make them feel good. You know, we mostly took their kids away and gave them to their families. If you didn't have an intact marriage, you lost that kid. Of course, the problem is now there's just too many of them. Of course, you know, it says, and that's where it comes in, the whole foster parenting crisis, which is there's not enough foster parents to take all these kids. Even if we pay them reasonably well for fostering a child, you know, the state pays for fostering a child. Even with that situation, people just used to take kids in because that's what you would do. And that was your child now. Because it was embarrassing. So the whole thing of, well, you know, all of a sudden, you're this girl, I don't know why it always ended up being the Baptist preacher's daughter. The Baptist preacher's daughter would all of a sudden disappear for a year or so. And then she would come back. Sometimes she wouldn't come back. She would just be gone. She would go live with an auntie or something. And really what it was either, the sad part was the last, I am worried that the last Baptist preacher's daughter, had an abortion to solve the problem. They came to see me as the WIC nutritionist because that's what everybody tells you to do. So I did the whole thing, you know. They had a pregnancy test done at public health, probably because they just didn't want to get word out. They knew the public health office had strict rules about not talking about these things. So she showed up pregnant, and they said, well, you've got to go over to WIC. So that's how I found out, and that's how this person got. All of a sudden, she stopped coming to these things. I don't know if she there was some, it was in the tale that I think I talked to them and they said that she had gone off to stay with her aunt. And you're going, well, either she got an abortion or there was a very fortunate miscarriage. Anyway, so yeah, and you go, we have to put up far more. We really do need to bring back social punishments, at least, for doing this, because we don't produce children. Those situations don't often produce children. They often are, the ones that do produce children actually produce lifelong children, children who aren't, whose tendency isn't to rise in society. Even though the government does all they can to make sure that there is no stigma to having children this way. Telling themselves to do it at great cost to everybody else. And the fact that it has become most children do not have a father in the home. Now this means like 51%, I suppose. I really don't want to get statistical because then I'll have to do a lot of research to back up what I say. And I'd rather not bother with that because when you do that, it doesn't sell more books. People, I get turned off by statistic books, so I'm not going to write one. You know, they'll say, well, most of the stuff in there is just lies and stuff like that. I should go out and find books where they're not lies. Anyway, so. Wow. It's much warmer up in Tucumcari. What's the deal with that? Being further south here. Because my house is somewhat protected from whatever, life. Anyway, so I need to go off and get some gas and so I will leave you for now. This is mostly just me putting down thoughts and because while I'm driving I can't really write out an outline. Hopefully this will give me some stuff when I'm working on I'm working on putting down a good outline that I'll have it done. So I'll leave you with that. I'm not going to leave you. Peace and blessing. See you. Bye.